This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big Q, this deal's so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose.
Taco to go.
This deal legit.
Taco to go.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go.
$2.99.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube too. At the Team 980. 6:30, we'll take a look ahead tonight to the Warriors T-Wolves game 2, no Steph Curry. We'll get you the latest on what Curry had to say, speaking for the first time today since his hamstring injury took him out of game 1. But right now, we wanted to let you hear a little bit of Take Command, which typically we do on a Thursday. And this is like a big giant circle here, because the Take Command episode that we recorded this morning is based off of a conversation that I had yesterday on this show with the Ringer's Todd McShay. If you missed the interview with McShay, it's great. He was phenomenal. You can check it out on YouTube at Craig Hoffman at the Team 980 or in our podcast feed. But we took a premise that Todd had done on his podcast and applied it to the Commanders. I think I set it up well enough in the episode to not need to do any more talking now. So without further ado, me and Logan talking about Josh Connerly through this premise. It was funny, Logan, because you actually sent me one of the recent editions of Todd's podcast, not knowing that I was about to have McShay on the show. And I was like, this is good. Thanks for sending me this, because I'm about to talk to Todd in a couple of hours. And I asked Todd why he wanted to do this particular episode, where he and his co-host looked back at the draft and said, okay, where are some of the big discrepancies where the league clearly felt differently about players than we did? And here is a slightly edited for clarity version of Todd's answer to that question.
Gary Horton got me into the business. He worked with Belichick and Saban and all those guys in the Browns. But one of his early lessons to me was, like, you can have your opinion and you need to be strong in your opinion and believe what you say. But I also want to remind you, there's a lot of really smart people and a lot of really money-rich organizations that are investing a lot of money into this. So, like, the premise needs to always be, and I think what we need to help represent sometimes, is they didn't just wake up in the morning and try to screw it up, right? And so, like, I always hear after, like, well, they did a terrible job based off of my rankings. First of all, maybe they just got it right. And they've got 13 people in their scouting department, and they have all sorts of resources. Maybe it's just better than my eye on this specific player, or had more information. But maybe for them, player 23, on my board, deserved to be pick 9, because he just fits what they want to do, and it's not reaching for need. It's actually, they know their system.
And so, if you look at that premise, Logan, I think the Commanders are an interesting team to look at. Because Josh Connerly was a guy that some people, thought they took too early. He was more of a second round guy. Adam Peters could not believe he was available at 29. Trey Amos, they were considering taking at 29 if Connerly had been taken in the pick or two before. He was available for them at 61. And then Jalen Lane is a guy that was the number one player on their board. I heard Peter say in an interview when day 3 opened, and he lasted all the way to them towards the end of the 4th round. McShay also loves Jalen Lane. Thought he was way, way underdrafted in terms of the Commanders' ability to get him at 128. So I wanted to take a look at those three players specifically and both say why we think the league is different. And in a way, this becomes the bummer episode where we can't help ourselves instead of just riding the high and the hype around the Commanders draft where most people think they crushed it, where we go, okay, but what if the consensus is right? What if the league was right? And what if the media types who had these players ranked a little lower, what if they were right and not Adam Peters and the Commanders? So I want to look at both sides of that coin. Let's start with Josh Connerly. Why do you think Adam Peters was so much higher on him than a lot of other folks, clearly around the league? They were able to draft him, but also maybe in media spheres, before we get to why maybe they could be right on the other end of it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And it's interesting to think about because I just was looking at my rankings and just reminding myself of where I had Josh Connerly. I think I had him in tier 4, if I remember correctly. So that means like he could have gone at 28 or he could have gone at 50 something, right? Like just depending on how the board felt. Like that's kind of the group of players I put him in. However, like thinking about what Adam is saying, you know, and what and the team that he talked about, he said, I thought Chicago could have taken him at 10. I think you're looking at a team in Chicago that needed a left tackle. And in a draft that was kind of devoid of like elite tackle talent, you know, I do think Connerly, given the information that's come out about Josh Simmons since the draft, would have been the third best tackle. And so it probably would have been a slight reach at 10 for them to take Josh Connerly Jr. However, I do understand valuing a position like left tackle and seeing a team like the Chicago Bears who could upgrade on offensive line, could upgrade at left tackle specifically with a talent like Josh Connerly and say, hey, that would fit their perspective. Now, that's where the draft gets a little bit funny. And I think the game that we played, like 2 days before the draft happened was a really good indication of this. Like they might have him in that first tier, Chicago potentially, right? But it's not an isolation, right? So it's like, which would we rather? Would we rather Colston Loveland or Josh Connerly? And I don't know if you guys remember, but Colston Loveland for me was a tier 2 player. So for me, for Logan Paulson, even though I love Josh Connerly, I'm going to take Colston Loveland, right? If Colston Loveland's not there for whatever reason, and it's maybe Tyler Warren and Josh Connerly, I might go Josh Connerly. You know what I mean? Like just depending on how I have those players ranked, just as a hypothetical example. And right. So,
and just real quick, I read a ESPN.com article this morning that had a bunch of post-draft intel. Apparently, you know, you told me this, and I think said it on the show, that like you think a lot of people in the league liked Loveland more than Warren.
Yeah.
The Bears taking Loveland at 10 apparently shut down a lot of potential trade activity in the 10 to 25 range. Like everyone stuck and picked because Loveland was the guy they were all gunning for, and then Chicago just took him at 10. So that is just I know this is more about Connerly, but fun fact in case you missed it.
Yeah, so I do think like when you compare those two players, it makes sense why Chicago went that direction. But in an offensive line draft where it went Will Campbell, Armon Membu, and then it's like Josh Simmons or Josh Connerly. Like I think Josh Simmons has more athletic upside, but it comes out kind of after, maybe right before that, you know, the knee injury is not exactly where they want it to be. He's got some off the field maturity things and he's 21 years old. So everyone's got their level of maturity, but some teams weren't comfortable with it. And then Josh Connerly's by comparison, a relatively clean prospect. So again, when they go to head to head post it, like it makes a lot more sense that he could potentially go there. And then you just play that game with Josh Connerly going all the way down the list. And each team's got different needs, right? So offensive line isn't a need for, I'd say, a bunch of teams kind of in that 10 to 29 range, right? So you're going to eliminate half of them. And then some people are going to have slightly higher grades on different players. So that's how it falls. And I don't think, you know, I think if you were to put get Adam Peters in a quiet room and kind of get him by himself and say, did you think Josh Connerly was the 10th best player in the draft? I don't think he would say yes. But because of the value of the position, I think that informs his response. You know what I'm saying? I think they value that position more. I think for the Commanders, as much as like it's so funny, this is one of the things I love. I absolutely love about the draft process is when the picks are made, everything becomes abundantly more clear. The Commanders fan base was like, oh, we really need edge. The Commanders front office thought we needed offensive line. So they're going to value those positions more just objectively, right? Like think about the guys they brought in for visits, right? They brought in Charles Grant. They brought in Anthony Belton. They brought in a bunch of offensive linemen kind of in the different tiers where they were picking, right? And so I think that shows you like that was a priority for them big time. And so when you say Josh Connerly at 29, like did he fall? I don't know if he fell because the value of the position is going to be inflated. It's in the same way you get a quarterbacks going higher than they should. Offensive linemen tend to do that as well. And I think that might be what Adam's referring to there.
Yeah, I think the other thing about the offensive line in this draft that was different, weird, insert your adjective here. You had three interior guys go before Connerly, right? So you have Tyler Booker at 12. You have Gray Zabel at 18. And what was it? I think 24 for Donovan Jackson to the Vikings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Jackson's kind of the wild card in there. Everyone's like, whoa. But also there's some people, I remember Dane saying like he really likes Donovan Jackson and thinks
he might be
a better tackle than a guard, even though everyone's got him going a guard. He's like, I like his tackle tape better. So we'll see what Minnesota ultimately does with him, whether he starts at guard and kicks out or just he play tackle. Does he wind up, you know, being a guard long term? We'll see. But like the value of interior offensive linemen. And by value, I mean literal value, right? It's not just like, oh, we kind of like these guys better. It's like, no, they're expensive now. And that's part of the calculation in a first round pick. And, you know, I remember talking to, in college, I remember talking to Mike Tirico for an interview. And I don't remember what the subject is, but, it's something NBA related. And he just goes, hey, man, if you ever want to know the answer, follow the money. Mm. Like when in doubt, follow the money. Think of how much more expensive guards are now than they used to be. And so all of a sudden, those first round picks that are on cap controlled rookie contracts at that position become a lot more valuable, even if you can find a guard in the fifth round. And so that upsets the apple cart a little bit as well in terms of the tier of offensive linemen and the style of offensive linemen that goes. And so if you have teams that, you know, are looking at O-line, they might be looking at guard, not just at tackle prospects who might ultimately kick inside. And so that opens up the pool of players and winds up pushing down a guy like Josh Connerly in the eyes of someone like Adam Peters, even if for you, he kind of went at the top end of the range that you thought he was going into the draft as a prospect, which I think then leads to part two of this, which is, okay, well then why did everybody else pass on Josh Connerly? Why did you have him where this is kind of the top end of his range going at 29? What are the concerns? And then we can talk, you know, we can try to be nice to our listeners / Commanders fans and alleviate some of them of how it does work. But like, what are the concerns? How does this wind up looking like an overdraft?
Yeah, I don't see, it's definitely not an overdraft. It's like exactly where I thought, like, you know, like again, there's about 15 to 25 players, I don't remember exactly, that fall in this range. And if any one of them went at 30, I'd be like, okay, good. If any one of them went at 50, I'd be like, oh, that's maybe a little bit lower than I thought, but not super surprising, right? That's what
let's take that out of it then. Just like, how does it go wrong for Josh Connerly? How does Josh Connerly not work out?
Yeah. So what I would say is like, there are some concerns. Like he is a younger prospect. And I think one of the things with offensive linemen that I've worked with and offensive linemen that I've played with at the NFL level, they look and they feel a certain way, not to sound weird, but their body is like, it's like this calloused mass and he's not there yet, you know? And I think that's something that he's a little bit developmental physically. Right. And so when you watch the film, man, like the film speaks for itself, right? The film is excellent. Like he's got really light feet. He understands angles. Like, does he lose? Sure. Does he have the length? Sure. But is there a size issue? Also sure. Right. It's the same way with, Oladejo, the guy that the Jets drafted, the left tackle.
Fashanu.
Yeah, Olu Fashanu. He had some play strength issues that were concerning to me. And I feel like Josh Connerly's kind of in a similar bucket, right? It's just like he's technically very sound. He's got good bend. He's like got all the things you want, but there is a play strength issue. And I had an offensive line coach tell me once, like, I can't get them bigger. So like if the guy's got like a smaller frame for an offensive lineman, like that's a huge red flag for me. He was talking about Harrison for the Jacksonville ended up drafting. It's like, I like the player a lot. I like the pass protector a lot, but ultimately like, is he going to be able to be big and strong enough to get to be a top 12 player in the NFL? And so when I think one of the things with Connerly is you look at him and you say like, that's a legitimate concern. Like, can you get big and strong enough to be in that top tier guy? Because like when you look at the top tackles in the NFL, they're all 325, they're all 6'5", they all got this kind of mass to them that's very unique in terms of athletes across the globe. The thing that I would point to is say like when you look at Connerly, when you meet him, he definitely has the ability from a frame standpoint to get there. It's just, is he going to put the work in? And so that's where I think the 30 visits, the Senior Bowl visits, the combine visits with the player help inform that. And you say, okay, this guy is a developmental guy to a certain extent, but we think he can get there. And we think he can kind of fit the need that we ultimately be the player we think he can be.
Right. And that would be my, like, if you're going to say, all right, that's the concern. Now let's ease it is, this is why you value the person. Like, this is why you value the competitor, because it's not just like, how hard do you play? And do you have a nasty streak on Saturdays that will translate to having that on Sundays? It's how do you work Monday through Friday to get to that point where you're ready to go on game day? How do you work in the off season? Can we trust you? And the fact that they have that trust in a guy who is so young that they think, yeah, there's no problem here. That one is, he like matures. It's so funny to talk about a guy who's like 6'5", 315. When he gets his man body, like, he's not done growing yet. And just, he will eventually fill out a little bit more, because that's what happens to human beings as they get in, you know, from their early 20s into their mid 20s. And especially if they're on an NFL weight program, one as good as what Chad Englehart has running through the strength staff for the Commanders. So that is something that I think is the divergent point, right? It's the literal fork in the road is, he is a very young prospect. McShay yesterday was like, he's a young pup. Like, he is barely 21 years old, if he's even 21 years old at this point. And so he can either stay smaller and not develop the core strength and continue to have the play strength issues and be a bottom half tackle in the NFL, or not work out a tackle at all and try to figure it out at guard, and maybe not even figure it out at guard. Or he can put in the work, get stronger, use his natural athleticism, study, continue to understand how to leverage his body and the angles and the technique and all that kind of stuff you need to be a master at the NFL level. And he can be a top 10 tackle or a top 10 guard in this league for a long time. And so I think that's kind of the Josh Connerly thing.
As a point of comparison that I think a lot of fans will resonate with, like Morgan Moses, when he first came in, reminded me a lot of Josh Connerly. Like, obviously Moe's a little bit bigger, a little bit longer, but I think Moe came in at like 310 or 305, you know, and he got up to 330, and he's a big old hoss now. And he's one of the best, more consistent.
Morgan
right
Moses is one of the biggest human beings I've ever been around.
Right. But he didn't come in like Josh Connerly's a big dude, right?
Yeah.
But like, he didn't come in like full, like filled out, you know what I'm saying? And I think like, that's one of the things with Connerly where you're like, damn, man, like he's still a baby. He's still a puppy. I think that's a good way to characterize him. And so there's a question that he doesn't develop, that it's too hard for him. He doesn't have the frame to get it done. And so there is a little bit of uncertainty and a little bit of risk there. But I think that's, again, with guys like Chad and understanding kind of the developmental nature of your program, I will say that about Dan and Adam, is they are willing to develop talent. And here is a guy that is exactly what you want for that type of program, right? You don't want the guy that runs a 5.4 40 that doesn't give up a – you don't want the Arianti Irsari by comparison. Like, for the Commanders, that's a weird fit because he kind of is who he is, right? The coaching doesn't matter. His floor is established. His ceiling is established. Connerly – relatively high floor, but sky high ceiling if it hits, right? And I think about Brandon Coleman, and it's the same thing. Floor relatively established, good dude, consistent worker. Like, he'll be a solid pro, but he could be something more because of the athletic profile. And I think that's where, if you look at the drafts, over the last two drafts for Adam, he does a really good job of walking that tightrope and valuing the high floor with the athletic upside. And a lot of teams don't do that. They think about it in different ways. And I think about Tyler Booker for Dallas is a really good juxtaposition for this, right? Tyler Booker, you know exactly who he is. Like, there's very little development. You know exactly what the player is. Like, he is what he is. People value that. For me, I like the Josh Connerly upside play a little bit. I think there's more value there long term, and you got to invest in it. And if you're not willing to invest in it, it never grows. It never comes to fruition. But I think this staff and this organization understands that, and that's why they can accommodate a player that I don't want to say is risky, because he's not risky, but to be the best version of himself, he needs to do some growing.
All right, if you want to hear the same exercise with Trey Amos, Kay Medrano, Jalen Lane, and hear about some of the undrafted free agents who are hoping to make some noise this weekend in rookie minicamp, check out the full version of Take Command wherever you get your podcasts. When we get back, NBA tonight. Can the Warriors steal another one in Minnesota? We will discuss. But first, the latest from the world of women's sports, presented to you by Wawa. Chicken how you wanna,
at Wawa with customizable roasted or crispy chicken sandwiches. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. We are 27 minutes away, roughly, from puck drop at Capital One Arena, where tonight the Capitals will try and get even with the Hurricanes in their second round Eastern Conference matchup in the Stanley Cup playoffs. John Walton has the call over on 106.7 The Fan. Of course, Sean McDonough and team on ESPN. We talked to Joe Beninati earlier on in the show. If you missed it and you want a little Caps preview, hit that rewind in the Odyssey app or rewind on the YouTube stream back to 5 o'clock. Check out the chat with Joe B. Won't be mad at you for doing it. But Joe B was great. And if you want to check that out, that is a good place to do it. Or, if in the podcast feed, of course, Anthony's got the podcast up there. We are going to turn our attention, though, to the hardwood, where tonight the Golden State Warriors are going to take on the Minnesota Timberwolves in game two of their Western Conference NBA playoff matchup without Stephen Curry. They won game one, even though Curry left in the first half with a grade one hamstring strain, and Curry actually spoke for the first time today about his status moving forward.
Eventually, there'll be conversations like that. I'm not even close to that right now, so I'm not rushing it. Like I said, there has to be a natural healing process that happens, and the body will tell you, even if you're able to do like normal basketball movements pain free and all that stuff. And I know how tricky hamstrings can be, where they can fool you and think that it's healed even if you don't feel anything. And so that gray area is a little will be confusing, I'm sure, but I'll do everything in my power to get back as soon as possible.
So, Anthony, he's 1,000% right. Also, I think the exact clip we just played is playing over your shoulder on TV right now, which is pretty funny. He's 1,000% right on hamstring trickiness, right? You had a hamstring strain months ago. Yeah. Were they the same one, or did you pull both of them?
I pulled both. I pulled one in 2023 and then one in 6 months after that, actually. So, yeah.
Excellent work. Welcome to getting older. It's something that happens in athletics. And the problem is exactly what Curry said. You feel fine until the moment that you don't. Hamstrings are finicky that way. And you will think you're good, and you're good for like 80% of what you need to do. And then you open up in a full sprint, which you haven't done before because your rehab protocol takes you one step at a time, and you pass, you fail, you re-injure it, you're out another 3 weeks. Repeat the process. Maybe it gets worse. Maybe you're out 6 weeks. Like, it can be bad. And so what they're going to try to do is make sure that when he is back, he is actually 100%. Of course, they have all the resources in the world medically. They can not only put him through the physical steps, but they can do unlimited MRIs and imaging and whatever else they want to do to try to understand where he's at. But unfortunately for the Warriors, the series doesn't stop. They got to figure out how to win without him tonight. And I think for them, the prospect would be to just, and it's rare that I'm like, hey, change completely who you are. But when you don't have Stephen Curry, you're already fundamentally changed from who you are, Anthony. And so I think if I'm them, I go from a team that runs a ton of motion offense, that is everything is predicated on Curry's movement, to an offense that I'm still doing some moving, in part because I don't want to be what the Celtics were at the end of the game last night, where you're just super stagnant. But ultimately, I'm trying to get Jimmy Butler the ball in dangerous situations. I'm trying to use guys like Moses Moody as cutters. And I'm also playing a guy like Moody, Gary Payton II, more in Steph's minutes to try and just be the absolute best defensive team left in the playoffs. And if you can be that and hold the T-Wolves under 100 points like they did in game one, now you got a chance. I don't think they can score 120 with this unit. There are too many non-shooters on the floor. And with Curry and Buddy Hield out there, your offense looks very, very different. They don't have the shooting to do it. They don't have the shot creators to do it. So I think being in a lower possession, lower paced, knockdown, drag out game, also the mentality and the personality of who's out there versus what you've got and some immaturity that we've seen in Minnesota, I would rather play that kind of game than I would any kind of fast-paced game. If I'm Minnesota, I am trying to run them into the ground.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything you said is obviously on point.
Always obviously on point. Sometimes they play some really dumb stuff, Anthony. But thank you.
I think in a game like this, though, and even in the fourth quarter with the Warriors in game one, they ran everything through Jimmy Butler. All their points were scored or assisted by Jimmy Butler. And we've seen him be able to, you know, will his team, put his team on his back several times when he's with the Heat. So we know what he's capable of doing. But also, I think on the other side, the bodies that the Timberwolves have to, you know, throw at Jimmy to slow him down. And also, if Jimmy's not going, then you're going to need somebody else to you know, step up. And Buddy Hill was that guy. But what happens when he's one of the focal points of the scouting report? Can he step up to the plate and have 27 points again? I don't know, because guess what? If I'm the Timberwolves, I'm maybe putting my best or my second-best defender on Buddy Hill, taking him out of the game, and now what? Now who do you have to turn to? Draymond Green, we're expecting him to hit 4 or 5 threes again? The odds are likely not. So I think it's definitely going to be an interesting chess match, you know, defending the Warriors, but also how you stop Anthony Edwards, who I think is going to be on a mission tonight to get downhill and definitely, you know, make his presence felt in the paint. Something that they didn't do in the first half of the first game.
For sure. And that's the other side of it, right? I think you can more reliably count on Ant not to have that kind of night than you can Buddy to have another night like that. Or, you know, you can almost rely on that Buddy's not going to have a night like that again. It's just seems unlikely. Although he's hot right now. Like, he had an excellent game 7, obviously, as well. But it's different when you're kind of a spot-up guy on the opposite side of the floor waiting for the ball to find you in rhythm versus you're the guy that they're running stuff for and you've got Anthony Edwards or whoever else on you. It becomes a very different equation. You know, I would also, from a lineup standpoint, just go all in, as I said, defensively, which means I'm letting Draymond handle the ball a ton. Like, I'm just like, all right, Draymond's my point guard. And defensively, he might wind up on Rudy Gobert, so he's playing like point center, but that's not new to Draymond Green, but he's now going to be doing it without Steph Curry. I'm running, you know, obviously a lot through Jimmy as well, but Jimmy's so dangerous when he operates in that high post, mid post area. And as opposed to, hey, let's get him the ball, let him go downhill. He can do some of that, too, in the pick-and-roll game. He and Draymond would be pretty lethal in that. But I'm trying to get him isolated on a mismatch. And I'm trying to use Buddy as, you know, who would have thought the Jimmy Buddy show is something that we would be more focused on the court than on the podium with them bickering at each other. But I would legitimately try to use him in the same ways that you use Steph sometimes as a distraction. And can you get someone who, you know, or some miscommunication, some mismatches, because you got guys cutting and crossing, and let Draymond operate at the top and just be like, all right, if nobody messes up, then we wind up with Jimmy and the ball in a good spot. And now we clear out. We've also killed some shot clock. We're not just dribbling the ball up and attacking with 16 on the shot clock in a pick and roll. We're trying to kill clock. We're trying to slow this game down. We're trying to catch our breath a little bit to be as fresh as possible on the defensive end. And we're also trying to make Minnesota guard that, okay, is Moses Moody dangerous offensively? Not really. Is Gary Payton dangerous offensively? Not really. Well, unless they're cutting like crazy. Like, you have to find ways to maximize your personnel. I think Steve Kerr has been very, very good at that over the years.
Yeah, and that's what Steph also was talking about in, you know, the shoot-around earlier. Their strength in numbers, like the fact they have different guys, you know, game in and game out, step up. One day it's the Gary Payton game. The other day it's, you know, Buddy Hill or Przemski. Him
give
going out
the,
and
give
six
us the
Przemski
game. Give us the Quentin Post game.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's gonna be a good game.
8:30 tonight on TNT, I believe.
Who you got though, Craig?
I got the Wolves in game two. Okay, I still think the Warriors can absolutely win the series, but I think that the Wolves take it in game two tonight at home.
I agree.
All right, who do you got?
I got the Wolves. I got the Wolves winning the series.
Well, then, yeah.
Well, I mean, if Steph comes back, that will be interesting because I didn't expect the series to go like it did in game one. So, who knows?
We will see. All right. So we'll also obviously see how quickly Curry can get back. And he's been ruled out for at least a week, but it doesn't mean he's out a week. Obviously, it might also depend how quickly they want to push him, depending on how these next couple of games go. When we get back, we'll wrap up the show. Real things, real people said into real microphones. It's Hoffman's show here on the Team 980, wrapping up on a Thursday. Tomorrow, Anthony, that means it's Friday.
Really?
Yeah.
It does.
Same as last week. I know it's a new thing, but like last week, that's how we're going to do it moving forward. Thursday into Friday.
Then no more.
All right. Tomorrow on the show, that means Friday. Every time I tease Clinton Yates on the show, it winds up being a week. He can't do it. So Clinton Yates is definitely not joining the show tomorrow. I will have an interview with the director of season 2 of Full Court Press, which is the ESPN Plus series that documents women's college basketball. They take 3 stars. Last year, Caitlin Clark was amongst them. This year, it's Hannah Hidalgo from Notre Dame, Flaje Johnson from LSU, and from the University of Southern California, Washington Mystics rookie Kiki Iriafin. So I have an interview that I am recording tomorrow morning, so we'll air that for you tomorrow. Anthony, we had a bunch of other stuff on the show tomorrow as well. Oh, Logan and I's rookie minicamp preview, and maybe Yates, but definitely not, because then he'll actually be here, except for if I say he's here, then he won't be. What else?
We got Howie Roseman, Adam Peters call.
Oh yeah, that's something we haven't gotten to from draft leftovers. Is all the behind the scene footage comes out. The Eagles released a trade call attempt between Howie Roseman and Adam Peters, and I thought it was an interesting discussion. Peters also addressed potentially trading with the Eagles on the Pat McAfee show, so we can get kind of both sides of that equation as well. We'll talk about it tomorrow. So. Plenty of fun on a Friday. We'll see what else happens. We'll also review the Caps. Obviously, they're playing tonight, as you might have heard, coming up in 10 minutes. That's all we got for today, though, except for this. Oh, let's start off. I can't believe this has taken us this long. The Met Gala was Monday. And of all the fashion correspondents, there's no one that we could possibly want to hear more from than Charles Barkley?
Spike Lee. That's my guy. He got the Knicks on 10. Janelle Monáe, one of my favorite people. And I love women who wear hats. Janelle Monáe, I'm going to give her a 10. Jalen Hurts, he got the hat on too. Thanks for that Super Bowl. I owe you big time, but you look great. 10. Andre 3000, interesting look, but he does have a hat. And I got a soft spot for hats. I'm going to give him an 8. Russell Wilson and Ciara. Now, she looks amazing. So I'm going to give her a 10. I'm going to give him, like, just a 9 because it's just a plain tux, but it's smooth. Shaboozy, I like it. Got another hat. Hats must have been the thing. So, Shaboozy, I'm going to give you an 8. Stevie Wonder.
I see you.
You a legend. You one of the best to ever do it. I ain't going to say nothing bad about Stevie Wonder. Even though, because he's got a train.
Train,
fool. The thing that you on the back of
the
you.
The second Shaq enters the equation, the bickering starts. They're the worst. And by okay. The worst, I mean
big
the best.
Big fella spoke. I'm taking you down to an 8. Colin Kaepernick. Nice suit, a little cape. No. Nice suit and cape, man.
You look like Dorsal Dolphin, Harry Potter. No,
okay, no. 8. Serena Williams. Man, she looks great. So that looks like one of those modern movie stars from back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. You look great, Serena. Lewis Hamilton.
Is he French?
No, he's English.
Impress Chuck.
I love the white suit. I love the beret. I'm gonna give you a 9.
First of all, Lewis, 10. Lewis, 100% 10.
Yeah, his face is crazy.
It was just so perfect. I would not have pegged that Chuck's fashion sense was better than Shaq's. But I get the sense that Chuck's fashion sense is better than Shaq's.
I mean, if I had to pick between the two, I literally might give the edge to Chuck by default.
I never really thought about it because I feel like Shaq takes more risks. But Chuck's suits typically look like very sharp. But yeah. Also an eye on like fashion is different than just like, hey, look put together on television. Occasionally Shaq does wear some crazy stuff that you're just like, bro, did you get dressed with your eyes closed? Like, everything you have is custom made. How is it custom made and that bad? Because they don't make regular clothes. They don't make clothes in your size. Yeah. Unless you ask for it. Malik Nabers was on 7 p.m. in Brooklyn, which is Carmelo Anthony's pod, and, had a pretty funny story, when he was asked about, the difference between college and the NFL. And I think I might know who he's talking about at the beginning of this answer.
What is the biggest difference between NFL and college?
Just about college, bro. I'm not going to say it was easy, but it was so easier than what I'm in now. They trying to kill you. You catch that ball, bro. I ain't caught the ball in some spaces. While I'm like, oh, I'm about to get jiggy. Somebody come out of nowhere. Boom. You might catch a good screen. Them D linemen.
Yeah.
Oh, they running. In college, you're going to find this nut in the defense that you're going to be like, oh, we going at him. And I didn't do whatever I wanted to do. In the NFL, oh, it's not going like that. That same dude, you might feel like he got a big jersey number on. He liked that, though. He liked that.
He got 37.
He liked that. He got big 35 on, no sleeves on. He is like that, though. Like, you can't sleep on that. He was a first-round pick. He dang just ain't got numbers open right now. But he about to get his next year, though, because he like
no
that.
Sleeves on.
We got to save the 39 because they ain't coming back next season.
He's just playing comfortable.
Dog, when he talks about in that first part of the answer, he's like, you catch the ball in some space, and you, I think I'm good, and pop. Remember what Frankie Louvu did to him in week three?
Yeah, he hustled
or
down
or week two,
field.
Whatever it was.
Yep.
Oh, that was when everybody in Washington fell in love with Frankie Louvu. They're like, this is my new favorite player. Yeah. And I now kind of when I'm watching potential – players, whether it's free agents or draft prospects, I kind of mentally put them through a Frankie Louvu test. I'm like, do you play as hard and as violently as Frankie Louvu? And if you can't score like an 8 out of 10, then you ain't playing here. Because Adam Peters is not interested. Dan Quinn's not interested.
I agree. Need that hustle. Need that energy. But, yeah, hey, look, Malik ain't lying, man. Everybody in the NFL, they're athletic, man.
That's the thing. Like, we had the call earlier asking about, like, Isaiah Simmons and, like, why hadn't he worked out in the league and should Washington looked at him? I'm like, well, when you go from being the best athlete on the field by a mile to the best athlete on the field by five yards, different ball game. Different ball game. You're going to need a lot more than your athleticism. All right. That's our show for today. There's a great Michael Penix story for tomorrow's version of Real Things. We didn't get to it today, but make sure you're staying all the way through for that tomorrow. Again, all the things we told you about 5 minutes ago will be tomorrow. We're out of show for today. Go Caps, go. See you mañana.